Chapter 9. Bunny shifted in his seat. He was feeling more or less human, but it had been a close-run thing. His body seemed willing to play ball for now, due to the importance of the situation and on the understanding that there would be a reckoning coming further down the line. They were in a briefing room upstairs in Sheriff Street Station. The chairs were occupied by Bunny, Gringo, and 10 other detectives, all of whom Bunny was on at least nodding terms with. The room was unpleasantly warm, due to the heating being whacked up full tilt. Condensation fogged the windows, obscuring the view of a busy Dublin Saturday morning rumbling by outside. Bunny had a bottle of water that he was clinging to for dear life. Gringo leaned casually across.
"How's the head?"
"I live."
The door opened, and D.S. Jessica Cunningham and D.S. Dara O'Shea strode in purposefully and took seats to the side of the screen at the front of the room. O'Shea was a stocky lad from Meath who couldn't look more like a Paddy if he tried. Shock of red hair, freckles, and a wide grin that wasn't so much cat that got the cream as cat who was more than willing to share the cream. "Sure, there's loads of cream, lads. Get stuck in." O'Shea nodded and smiled at a few faces he recognised, which seemed to be almost everybody in the room. In contrast, Jessica Cunningham sat down and stared at the back wall with an intensity that implied it was her sole objective of the morning, and the room's occupants were a hindrance. The only other female in the room was Detective Pamela Butch Cassidy, but to say there wasn't much sense of sisterhood between them was an understatement. Cunningham knew it was Butch who had given her the Robo-Tits nickname. Bunny watched Butch shifting awkwardly in her seat. Trying to get back on Cunningham's good side had proven to be a lot like trying to unhit the iceberg. Bunny leaned casually across to Gringo.
"Looks like you'll be walking under Sergeant Cunningham again."
"Try not to speak, you muck savage. Your breath is like a wino's jockstrap."
Bunny sat up straight and ran his hand across his mouth. The air he captured under his nostrils indicated Gringo might have a point. No doubt he was also keen for Bunny to shut up. D.I. Fintan Rigger O'Rourke strode in and closed the door behind him. He stood in the centre of the room and immediately commanded it. A tall man with a wiry physique that spoke of his obsession with long-distance running, O'Rourke was quite the high flyer. For several years, he had been the youngest D.I. on the force, and nothing indicated that he planned to stop his ascent there. You wouldn't find anyone with two brain cells to rub together who would bet against him for the top job one day. Himself and Bunny had been firm friends back in the day, although O'Rourke had long since started hanging out in loftier circles, even before the unfortunate incident at his wedding, when Bunny had protected himself from the advances of an irate swan.
"Right," said O'Rourke. "Thanks for coming in. You've all been seconded to my team, the Major Robberies Unit, for the foreseeable. I'm D.I. O'Rourke, and this is D.S. O'Shea and D.S. Cunningham, who are my right hands. Technically, we're supposed to cover all major robberies that happen anywhere in the state. Don't ask me to define what major means. It's like true love and loitering with intent. You just know it when you see it. That's the theory. Here's the reality."
O'Rourke nodded to O'Shea, who turned off the lights and fired up the projector attached to a laptop. A picture of a man in his early 20s appeared on the screen. He had tightly cropped hair that was gelled down, and he wore tinted glasses. He was fairly short in stature, but he had the look of a man who could handle himself if required.
"Tommy Carter," said O'Rourke. "The king of the Clanavale estate, and the leader of his very own crew of modern-day highway robbers. They've been the sole focus of my unit for the last 6 months. That farce on the Keys yesterday was them, as was the Prassart van job in July and the Bank of Ireland job in Dalkey. That's just the ones we're certain of this year. Going back over the last two, we like them for several other outings. Basically, if it's high-end and unsolved, odds on it was them. They're ruthless, efficient, and sharper than anything we've ever dealt with. Put it this way. If most of the crews working in Dublin are still cavemen banging their nuts off a rock trying to make fire, these lads are sitting around laughing while smoking cigars and scoffing barbecue. They're lapping them. And frankly, us. And you're here to see if we can't catch up.
Nobody said anything, but Bunny could feel the ripple pass around the room. Everyone was sitting up a little straighter, bright-eyed. This was the kind of case he joined the force for.
Carter is only 22, which is an unusually young age to be the head of an outfit like this, but believe me, the lad is anything but typical.
O'Rourke nodded, and the picture changed to an old press cutting of a middle-aged man standing defiantly at the front of a crowd of neighbours, like a king before his tribe.
Tommy is the son of Donal Carter, seen here. A name some of you will no doubt remember.
Bunny caught the slightest of glances from O'Rourke.
About 12 years ago, he was the man who announced the Clanavale estate was a drug-free zone. He rallied the residents and became quite the media darling. Some dealers who objected to his endeavours tried to burn his house down with his kids still inside it.
Again, just the slightest glance.
Luckily, that didn't come to pass, thanks to Garda intervention. Donal also did the unthinkable, and won. To this day, nobody deals hard drugs on the Clanavale estate. At least, not for very long, and rarely without it causing them and the health service some major inconvenience. These days, Daddy is sidelined, dealing with a serious kidney complaint.
So Tommy runs the estate now.
And I mean runs it. It also means he and his crew are dug in there like termites and we can't get near them. Patrol cars get their tires slashed. If you go round to lift any of them, you have to bring a lot of bodies, or else your car will be a bonfire. Covert surveillance is impossible, and forget getting anyone close to them. Everyone on that estate grew up there and they don't leave. It is an island. And Tommy is their boy king.
People shifted in their seats. Coppers didn't like to admit it, but Clanavale was one of those estates. If you went in at all, you went in the daylight, and you went with company. It hadn't always been that way. Bunny knew better than most, it having been one of his first beats. But times had changed.
"These are his crew," continued O'Rourke.
The picture changed to a man in his 40s with a paunch. He appeared to be standing outside a pub, smoking a cigarette and glaring at the camera in a way that suggested if looks couldn't kill, he was willing to finish the job.
Franco Doyle, the self-styled consigliere, a friend of Carter Sr. from back in the day. He did time for stolen goods once and housebreaking twice. He's married to Carter's cousin. It's not technically correct, but Tommy, and hence everyone else, calls him Uncle Franco. He seems to be the connection with the bigger criminal world. Not that they generally have much to do with any of it. They keep themselves to themselves, and anyone who has tried to change that arrangement from outside has regretted it.
O'Rourke nodded, and another face appeared on the screen. This time, a passport photo of a man in his late 20s. He had shoulder-length blonde hair, tied into a ponytail, and one of those faces that was all sharp angles.
Meet John O'Donnell, at one time unofficially considered the most lethal man in the Irish Armed Forces. Only he's no longer in the Armed Forces. A Wexford boy, he rose quickly through the ranks to join the Irish Rangers. Jokes about our army aside, those lads are special forces and are highly regarded amongst their international counterparts. It's a tough gig to get. O'Donnell won commendations, was clean as a whistle and was generally G.I. fecking Joe. He was their golden boy, and they were gutted when he upped and left at the end of his tour a couple of years ago for no apparent reason. He's been to Somalia on peacekeeping, where, incidentally, the Irish Rangers wore U.S. uniforms to blend in. He won some medal in a competition with the Yanks. I asked around. His nickname was, I kid you not, Iceman. Seriously, O'Donnell is an expert in surveillance, counter-surveillance, ordnance and weaponry with a specialism as a sniper. He is, in short, quite the badass, and an absolute nightmare for us.
O'Rourke nodded, and the picture changed again, this time to a shaven-headed man in military fatigues, posing with a large knife and a bigger grin. He had a heavily muscled physique, below a face with a hint of chubby cheeks to it. Bunny would have laid money he had been a fat kid and was now seriously overcompensating.
Jimmy Moran, another Clannavale Estate alumnus, was in the Rangers too, but not for that long. Allegations about his behaviour. The Army aren't wild about sharing details with us, but from what we've gathered through back channels, when his unit were in Canada on a training exercise, he got rough with a local girl. Charges were never brought, but it was enough to get him dishonourably discharged. His buddy O'Donnell left 3 months later, and we reckon they both teamed up with Carter straight after.
O'Rourke nodded again, and O'Shea turned the lights back on and killed the projector. The detective inspector took a few moments to look around the room, making eye contact with each occupant in turn.
Those lads, the last two in particular, are serious individuals. We reckon when they first teamed up with Carter, he was 19. 19. I don't know what you were like at that age, but I know I was still having a hard time getting served in pubs and finding a young lady willing to do more than hold hands.
A smattering of laughs from around the room.
Tommy Carter was successfully convincing Special Forces boys to take his orders. The reason they did? He's smart. Really smart. Genius IQ when he was in school. They say he could have been anything. Then, when he was 15, an older boy touched his sister in a way she didn't like. Carter, still a runty little fucker at the time, smashed this big lad to pieces and then broke both his arms. Let me clarify. He knocked the bloke out and then calmly broke both his arms. He didn't see any time for it because the lad wouldn't testify. It got Carter out of the school system, though. Not that he seemed to care. He isn't some rocket. He is cool, calm, and very thorough. He reads constantly. The little shite seems to permanently have a book on him. He plans everything to the last detail. When we were about to bring him in for a chat after the last job, he turned up at the station before we could send for him. He then sat there for 8 hours and said nothing except for reciting a bit of James Joyce over and over again. He likes to play with us, and frankly, he's been doing whatever the hell he wants and we've been helpless. It's about time that changed.
O'Rourke looked around the room again and let the silence linger.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're here to finally take him down.